people are addicted to them and it's taking over more of their lives. And I'm like, we haven't even gotten started yet. Hello and welcome to Terrifying Robot Dog. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we're here to talk about how technology is changing the way we interact with the world. This week we talk about eyeballs as a platform. Please stay tuned. Terrifying Robot Dog is next. This is bonkers.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm happy or mildly annoyed.
Yeah, timing wise.
Yeah.
So, dear listener, like real life imitating sci-fi, I guess.
Yeah.
Again, but this is crazy. So why don't you? I mean, this is really your shebang. So why don't you kind of give the background?
Yeah. Back in December of 2011, I had cataract surgery, and the surgeon who performed the operation is just a incredibly smart and talented guy, and it turns out that in his spare time he just develops new eye implants.
Because that's a fun way to spend your weekend.
Well, I mean, I guess it's what he does full time now. But I know he started on this probably back in 2012.
Yes, I would say so from the patent applications.
Yes, all 208 pages on the one patent, and then there's a whole plethora of others.
That's just the images. Like there's a 208 page document on the U.S. patent site of just diagrams and really nasty photos of eyeball close-ups. And they're and also like almost impenetrable hundreds of pages of document just describing in painful detail, you know, the anterior wall will have a power lens refraction of, you know, who knows what they're talking about. But it's fun to search through for special keywords and figure out how they're going to solve certain problems. So we could, we can get to that as we go along.
Yes.
But yeah, this kicked off with Kelly sending me a link to a video, which looks like it was ripped straight from the screen of Total Recall or Blade Runner.
Yeah, it's like something you'd expect to be playing in a waiting room at some in the background in some waiting room in a sci-fi movie.
Exactly, the music and everything.
Yeah.
All of this is just totally crazy. Omega Gemini refractive capsule.
Yes. Yes. Should I explain a little bit how intraocular implants work?
Yeah. So
would that help to sort of?
Yeah, I think this needs a fair degree of background to even make it real at all.
Okay, we're going to have a short anatomy lesson then.
Yes, good.
In the anterior or front, you know, front part of your eye, you have what's called a capsular bag, and it's basically just a bag of very thin sort of epithelial cells that hold the lens of your eye. And in traditional cataract surgery, like I had, the front part of that anterior capsule is removed. Your natural lens is taken out and a lens implant is inserted. And this sometimes has issues. Like later on, I had to go back and have more of that interior, the front part of that capsule removed. And then later I had to go back and have, you know, the back half of it lasered away because that sort of thing. So that capsular bag is destroyed during the process of cataract surgery. And just from what I gather quickly from looking at this, Omega Ophthalmics has developed here is a lens, is an implant that preserves that capsular bag or sort of provides an artificial type bag and keeps that area open so that lenses and other devices can then be implanted in this capsule.
Yeah. Alarmingly, in the video, they do it with a needle going through the front of your eye. But hey.
Yeah, that's how it works.
That's how it works. So, okay. Yeah. So, you go down to the Omega Mart on the corner of any city and you get your OG upgraded. You go in, put a vacuum cleaner on your eyeball so it doesn't move around, and they inject a lens upgrade, or they, you know, like, oh, I'm starting to get blurry again. Maybe I need a tweak. Is that like the concept?
Yeah, the concept is there's some, from what I gather, there's some refractive lens built into this capsular implant. But it also has space in it to implant additional lenses so you can like further tweak and improve vision. So, yeah, I mean, potentially these things could be changed. The lenses could be changed out later, or you could add additional things and that sort of stuff. Or you can do just more opportunities for sort of tweaking and measurements and adjustments during the primary surgery.
But wait, there's more. You're not just going to have better vision or vision in some cases.
Yes.
They're like, hey, well, we've got this this little installation area, this airlock, this socket.
Airlock to your eyeball.
Yeah, right. Airlock to your eyeball. while we're in there, you know, we could detect the glucose levels in your that exist in your eye that would be representative, presumably, of your overall glucose levels, and measure them and send that information back to a phone, presumably, or some presumably more high powered device.
Or we could just display it in your vision.
Or we could just display it in your vision. That's the craziest part of the video, where you have to imagine, obviously this is audio, but you have to imagine like the side view of an eyeball, right? So it's kind of like the cutaway view of just this round eyeball, and the bump on the front, which I'm assuming is the lens, the anterior capsular bag, as I've just learned, in which the lens exists. And so it's like that classic thing that you'd see on the wall of the eye doctor. But they're showing like the eyeball is kind of like looking at weather. So like looking at the sky, and then there's like some light rays going through the lens to the back of the eye where the retina is, right? And it's got like a little like temperature gauge, and you know, like it's got a little weather report like you'd see on the lock screen of your phone. But it's not something you're looking at. This kind of gets in the definition of what does looking at mean. You're seeing it, but you're not looking at it.
Right. Yeah. It's an augmented reality sort of view
projected onto your retina from inside your eye.
Yeah.
That's not amazing.
No, not a bit.
And the thing is, I've heard sci-fi futurist people, you know, talk about exactly this. They're like, it's not going to be Google Glass. It's not going to be on your glasses. It's not going to be Oculus Rift. It's going to be in your eye, projected straight on your retina. Why go through the lens? You know, they're like, why bother going through the lens? Why go through your normal senses? Like, why go in the front door when you're already inside the house? You know, you just like project the information direct to the sensors. And, you know, and you can imagine like a future iteration that's like straight in your brain to your visual cortex. It doesn't even have to mess around with your eye.
Yeah, well, we were looking at another article today that puts things on the retina that stimulates the retina.
Which was crazy cool. So like if your retina is intact, but the photoreceptors are not for some reason, which I think is the cause of macular degeneration, or I think you would know better.
Retinitis pigmentosa, I think is what you're thinking of.
There you go. That is what I was thinking of. I always get those two mixed up. But you're right. That is what it said. Then they're like, oh, well, just kind of like put a solar cell in there, which A, is self-powered because the light is what makes it operate. And when there's no light, there's nothing for it to do anyway. So, you know, some light hits it, it powers up, and it stimulates the undamaged, perfectly functioning retina to send signals to the brain.
Yeah.
And if that's not shocking enough, they tested this in mice, which I don't know if you know, dear listener, but mice eyeballs are really tiny.
Yeah, they are. They're really small.
So if they can fit it into a mouse's eyeball, I think that like a human eyeball would seem roomy by comparison.
Yeah, I think it would. And I think that was not the first article I had read about this. So I think that has been, I mean, obviously it's been in development for a while, but I think I had read about it once before, and perhaps there might even be a TED talk on it. I'll have to go back and look, where it started out at a very low resolution and they just have improved it over time.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, so back to the Omega thing, they were sort of, they're thinking big because in the video, and in fact on the website, there's a developers tab.
Yes.
If you would like to develop for the Omega platform, the Omega eyeball platform, fill out your information here to find out more.
Go sign up.
So you can imagine, you know, I don't know, Snap Inc. signing up as developers for this and putting like an upgrade in there that allows you to, instead of putting filters on, you know, like somebody's face on New Year's Eve to make it look like confetti is like glittering around you.
You just photo filter your vision.
You just photo filter your vision. So it's like confetti on everybody's face, or, you know, it's like, it reminds me of that thing. Like if you're nervous before a public speaking event, just imagine everyone in their underwear. Well, now you don't have to imagine. This is real. Like, this is in clinical trials. This isn't like, maybe someday, wouldn't it be cool if, like, this guy has a patent for this, and there, it appears to be, oh, here's a timeline. Yeah, they did, for this one, the Omega one, they tested it in rabbits. January, okay. Family. Yeah, so they're getting patents, 2017, January and March, brand new update. But yeah, so, I mean, idea in 2011, tons of work. I mean, you should see the patents, ladies and gentlemen. It is like a crazy amount of detail. Like, this is not like a hand wavy, hey, maybe we could do something cool like this someday. Like, this is moving forward.
Yeah, he went all in on this one.
Mm-hmm. So U.S. Patent Office is cranking out patents for it and trying to see, looking for one that says testing.
They might not be to human trials yet.
Apparently, it looks like not. But so the thing that was I was most curious about when you told me this and I watched the video and you're like, yeah, this is, you know, this is a thing. This is a real thing that's happening. It's not just sci-fi. For something that's going to be in your eye, it's kind of big. So it's not huge. It fits in there perfectly. It's not like your eyes would be bugging out, but
no.
You know, it's from the looks of it, it's probably the maybe diameter-wise a little smaller than a dime.
I don't think it's that big.
Yeah, it's smaller than that. I'm trying to think of something that would be.
I have not looked at the measurements on the patents. I'm sure they're on there.
Mm.
But just from what I know of eyeball anatomy and the size of the lens implant that's in my eyeball, I'm going to guess somewhere around 10 millimeters.
Okay. So the question that I had when I saw this was like, how are they going to power it? Right? Because it's got like these two sort of copper looking antenna things extending out of it.
Yeah. And the purpose of those is to hold it in place.
I see. Okay.
Those aren't actually antenna for the sake of antenna. The purpose is to hold them in place. And then after the surgery, tissue sort of grows back around those and it kind of anchors everything in there.
Gotcha.
And normal lens, intraocular lens implants that exist now and have existed for many years have those.
Okay. So it seems like the novel concept here is that it's got space for upgrades.
Exactly. Yeah. It just that it keeps that capsule open rather than destroying it and just having a lens fixed in there.
Mm. So I searched the gigantic patent for the word electric, and sure enough, got to hit because there's no way you can read this thing. It's literally impossible for a human being to read this. You'd have to get a lawyer instead. I was like, how are they going to power this thing, right? So sure enough, they're like inductive charging, like you pillow, bedding, face mask, headboard, inductive
glasses,
headbands. That's a good look, by the way. hats, so on and so forth. All of these different things that could inductively charge the device. But if you've ever used an inductive charger on your phone, you may have noticed that it makes your phone really hot.
Oh, that's a good point. It does.
And so I searched a little bit about that. And you know, they don't want to hard boil your eye. So they, you know, so steps have been taken to minimize the heat created by the alternating electromagnetic field.
Well, you also have to figure anything that can be implanted, like any hardware that can be implanted in this capsule in such a way as to not interfere with vision, because there's only going to be a few millimeters of workable space, like maybe just like two or three for you know, I guess, non-transparent hardware. Is going to be really tiny and have really low power consumption.
Yes, exactly. And so this is the, I mean, it's easy to overstate this because it is my narrative already. So like take this with a grain of salt. But when mobile came around, one of the things that I thought was really interesting about it, and I think contributed to the adoption, is that it allowed a new computing posture. Where first we had this sort of desktop computing posture where people were seated using both hands. They're this big monitor. They're not facing anyone. They've got this giant thing in their way. They're probably facing a wall. And then when the phone came around, it was like, oh, you know, you just needed one hand. You could be standing up, walking, whatever. You could be in many more situations where you would be completely impractical to use a desktop or even a laptop. So, you know, now you see people, like I was walking to work today, I almost ran into like five people who are staring down at their phones. And so it enables a wider range of postures so that the computing can move into more of your everyday lives. And it feels to a lot of people like it's too much and it's sort of people are addicted to them and it's taking over more of their lives. And I'm like, we haven't even gotten started yet. There are a million other postures, if you will, that are super inconvenient with a phone, where just as it would be inconvenient to use a laptop in line at a Starbucks, but you use your phone constantly in line at the Starbucks, it's very inconvenient to use your phone when, I don't know, you're driving.
Yeah, exactly.
or you're raking leaves, or you're, you know, doing whatever. Your hands are full, or your hands are wet, or it's just raining in general. There are lots and lots of times when using your phone is still, I mean, when computing is still not convenient. And by computing, I mean being connected to the global brain. So there's plenty of opportunity for improvement in terms of how often and how many situations we can be in when we're connected. So if you look at, okay, the original computing posture was seated using both hands and your full attention, then the new, you know, two hands, both eyes, basically, the new posture is one hand, one eye, and standing or even walking.
Can verify it works with one eye.
Yeah. I mean, then if you just follow that arrow, the next posture will be no hands, no eyes, or no hands, no screens. So then it's like, okay, that has to be in your eye. It could be voice computing. We obviously talk about voice computing.
And there's been a lot lately about textiles and smart fabrics as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So as much as it feels, or it may feel to people of a certain age, that the smartphone has kind of permeated every aspect of our lives, it's not even close. There's lots and lots and lots of times when left to be permeated, so to speak. And people have demonstrated that they do like being connected. They want to be connected. They don't want to be disconnected.
In addition, for something like this, you're talking about the potential to sort of improve the health and quality of life for a lot of people, because these types of eye conditions that a lens implant treats or monitors for, such as improvements to cataracts and macular degeneration and all that sort of stuff, are typically often sort of comorbidities with other diseases that this could be used to monitor and to help to sort of regulate and gather info on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm trying to decide where, if I was going to have an implanted device, so past wearables into implant, eye is probably not the first place I'd go. But I guess it depends on the functionality. I mean, I've had eye surgery, minor, but whatever, I did it. And it had a dramatic effect on my quality of life. And that's just me just not being able to see, you know, like I shouldn't even say it like that. That's me having blurry vision to the point where I couldn't quite drive without glasses. Like, big deal. Like, what, 80% of adults?
You want to talk about life-changing eye surgeries?
Yeah, seriously. So I guess, I mean, for the people that are going to have this surgery first, it's not going to be a choice. They're going to be like, yeah, give me that.
Yeah. I mean, if I could do it over again, if I could go to Dr. Wirtz and need this cataract surgery, and he said, oh, I could give you this traditional lens implant, or, hey, I could give you this other lens capsule that we could potentially put some augmented reality hardware into in the future, I'd be like, yeah, I'll take one of those.
Sign me up for that. Yeah. So it's like, I would just love to know the timeline. I would love to know, like, when, like, a, you know, just like a feasible reality, you know, like, what do you think? It's got to be less than 10 years, right?
Oh, yeah, I would imagine so. I would say within the next 5.
Yeah, right? I mean, to the point where they would be allowed to put it in humans.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the first step is the clinical trials on this capsule itself, which is, I can imagine the capsule making it to market certainly within, I'm going to be really ambitious and say maybe within the next 3 years. And then I guess, since effectively this is just a super fancy, awesome placeholder, then I guess the big thing after that is the hardware that you're going to insert in it that's maybe different than just a traditional intraocular lens. I mean, maybe it has some kind of connected or electrical type thing. So, I mean, it's really kind of talking about two separate things here when you're talking about how quickly stuff's going to come to market and be available and that sort of thing. So I can see the capsule being out there and then hardware for it just slowly accumulating over time.
Yeah. So it's, oh man, I'm so now I'm going down the economic path. So not a lot of people are going to have this, right? So
this is not the lens implant that's going to be covered by Medicare.
Right. So not a lot of people are going to have it. So as a developer, so a third-party developer developing on this, as they refer to it, platform, there's not a lot of incentive for the kind of, you know, financial incentive for like an indie developer to do something on top of this. It'd be more of like either a labor of love or
medical monitoring.
Yeah.
It's going to be the first thing.
Yeah. It'll be like diabetes monitoring and stuff in the, you know, and mm-hmm. other stuff, but stuff like that. It's going to be Google, Apple, Facebook. I'm not saying it will be, but those are the kinds of companies that do have a vested interest.
Yeah, and the ability to invest in something like this.
Yeah, they've got the cash on hand, and from a strategic standpoint, they could lose money on it for a while. And
I mean, first and foremost, this is not something that people with healthy eyeballs are going to opt for right. a very long time.
Right.
Yeah. So I really see it as being medical monitoring as the first step.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. So if somebody looks at your eye, I don't remember what year we actually met in person. Do you remember?
I don't know. I don't know if it was before my cataract surgery or after.
I think it was before.
I think it was. Yeah.
Can you see the implant? Like if Rich like looks at your eye?
No, you can't. Before I had the surgery, you could see the cataract.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, you can't see the implant. It just looks like a normal eyeball. I mean, I have abnormalities that you can see. You can see where they've removed part of my iris to treat the glaucoma I had that caused the cataract to start growing and blah, blah, blah. But no, you can't see the lens implant itself.
I see. Because I can see contacts. Like when someone's wearing contacts, mm-hmm. you can see it. But okay, but this inside your eye, so there's not like, because you said it has like the two like sort of wire looking things to hold it in place. It'd be like interesting if you could actually see them.
Yeah, those would be, I guess, behind the iris.
I see. Okay. Oh, right. Yeah, that makes sense because they did sort of a zoom in at one point. It felt like you were sort of flying into the abyss of somebody's
yeah.
eyeball. But I don't know. I like to see stuff like this every once in a while because it makes it seem like the kind of hand-wavy prognostication that we're prone to is like there's a path to it. Like you can see mm-hmm. there's a path, things are happening in that area, and the people who are building it see it as a platform. Yeah, like they recognize it for that.
Yeah.
Perhaps
yeah,
not a, you know, app store for your eyeball type of platform, but certainly for other medical professionals to like you said, maybe build or create little plugins, physical hardware plugins that do things like monitor blood sugar levels or something.
Yeah, yeah. And in this case, all of that aside, even just the ability to go back in and swap out a lens or make adjustments
mm-hmm.
to the lens as vision changes over time is a big win there.
Sure. It's like,
yeah,
you know, lay the groundwork. It's like do the big surgery once and then allow it to mm-hmm. be tweaked after the fact. So it's not this giant invasive thing over and over, which you're probably just going to be like, yeah, you know what? I'm probably only going to live for 20 more years. I'm going to skip that second surgery.
Yeah, I'm stuck with the lens I've got for the rest of my life.
Yeah. So upgradable eyeballs, folks.
Mm-hmm.
On the way to a corner drugstore near you. Wow. All right. What did we leave out? Did we forget anything?
I don't think so. We didn't have any housekeeping this week, did we?
Nope. I think this is episode 10.
I believe so. Next week is book club.
Yes. Have you been making progress?
I purchased the audiobook.
Excellent. I did too, actually. I had the regular book and I switched over to the audiobook.
No, I just got my Audible credit last night, so
cool.
I'm gonna knock it out this weekend.
All right, dear listeners. So you've been warned.
We should probably give them the title of the book again.
Yes. If you want to read The Inevitable by Kevin Kelly. That's what it's called, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. The Inevitable by Kevin Kelly. You can do so in the next week and then kind of join the book club and not be afraid of any spoilers. It's not really a plot on this one, so I guess it wouldn't be spoilers. This one is not. It's nonfiction, mm-hmm. unlike the last one. So really good. It's just really good. Super eye-opening, so to speak. And we look forward to talking about it then.
Yes.
All right. That's our show for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we hope you join with one eye. And hope you join us again next week for Terrifying Robot Dog. Bye.
Bye. Kelly with an eye. Kelly with one eye.
Yeah. Would you like to see Kelly and I in your inbox once a week? Get new episodes delivered straight to you with show notes, links to additional content, and more. Plus, you can reply to any message to suggest topics for future episodes. To get the inside track, go to terrifyingrobotdog.com and look for the Keep Me in the Loop button. That URL again, of course, is terrifyingrobotdog.com.
At first, I thought you said, would you like to see Kelly's eye in your inbox?
I was going to make a joke there too, but I was like, all right, enough of the jokes.